a revenge for God, for Hashem himself in Midyan. That's like the Pinchas position, taking up as if when Hashem said about Pinchas, he took the vengeance I should have taken. And it's an identification with the one you're taking the vengeance for. That was the Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch point. So Moshe speaks very similarly here. It's a nekama, it's the vengeance Hashem should take. But Hashem said, no, this is the vengeance for the sake of Klal Yisrael. Moshe's already a little bit at odds here. He made a decision of how to qualify it and how to describe it. Then Pasuk 4, of course, says he gets 1,000 from each shevet. And at this point, it says they will be sent. So the Jewish people, they handed over the guys, formed the army. And then we find in Pasuk Vav, Moshe does something else very interesting. It says, Vayishlach Osam. Moshe sent them. Now, when somebody sends somebody, that means he's not going. Because if you're going with them, you're getting sent with them. You don't use that verb. So he sent them. And the end of the pasuk, 1,000 from each shevet, so forth and so on, and he sends specially Pinchas and Eliezer. And then in pasuk 7, it says, and of course they brought the kalim and they brought the chatzotros and whatever they needed. And then they stood up in pasuk 7, Vayitzba'u al Midyan, like Hashem had commanded, and they killed every male. They killed the kings of Midyan, along with the other ones who died, and they named the names of five kings, and also Bilam is also killed. Now, at Pasuk 9, it says, the continuation of the afterplay of the war. Now let's play our game. The death of Moshe, it's as if it's stopping the war with Midyan, by virtue of the fact of the dependency of one on the other. Hashem says, this war will get executed, and then you will die. Right back in the beginning, Pesukim. And Moshe responds in the following way. Tremendous zerizus. He gets right on it. He hops to it right away. The Yalkut says a very surprising thing. If Moshe would have asked not to die, consequently, he wouldn't have died. Because Hashem said to Moshe, if you don't take the revenge on Klal Yisrael's enemies, then you won't die. One is dependent on the other. Once that war is executed, your time will have come. Very, very poignant moment in Moshe's life. But Moshe said to himself, I don't have permission to postpone a direct tzivui of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I can't do that. So, of course, he doesn't ask to not die. I'm going to do what Hashem said. So Moshe said to Klal Yisrael, raise that army like Hashem commanded. But then, like we pointed out, it says he sent them. Vayimasru. Now, the Chazal tells us it was against their will because Klal Yisrael knew that the death of Moshe hinged on the prosecution of that war. What a hell to be in that army. You don't want to go, not because of lack of courage and bravery and a desire to listen to the will of Hashem. They knew Moshe was telling them to do what Hashem told them. But they really were in a state of not wanting to actually go. And this is where my heart was very deeply touched. This becomes the basis of Moshe's, maybe even his greatest moment. I can't grade Moshe's moments, but this is right up there. Given that no war, Moshe doesn't die, and given also the Klal Yisrael who knew that didn't want to go, why does Moshe persist? And the second question, because although it's called the revenge for Klal Yisrael, Moshe called it Hashem's revenge, like Pinchas last week. Therefore, he said, we can't hold back from doing this. That is literal Mesiras Nefesh. Literal. He knows by him persisting and making sure that Hashem's command is kept and the war is prosecuted, he will die. So then we have a second level kasha. Why didn't he go? And this is not only a famous piece of Torah, according to Medrash and in Rav Shmulevitz. But the question is, so if this is so important and you've got no resistance, Moshe, you always like to carry out Hashem's will, and you're not even worried about your own life, and you know it's going to eventually, the eventuality is the war gets done, and then he dies. And especially, what we were asking why he didn't also go to participate in it, given his willingness even to die. Why is it called the Nekama of Klal Yisrael? In other words, he should go. If Hashem said, this is Nekama for Klal Yisrael, he should have jumped to go and participate with that great mitzvah. That's how, because that's what Hashem called it. And another level kasha, the Medrash Rabbah and the Medrash Tanchuma say, since it says Moshe sent them, is it possible? Moshe says to himself that Nikom ba'atzmacha, that Hashem meant he's supposed to participate. That's the simple understanding. You participate. Hashem meant everybody should participate who's ever chosen, and Moshe would have been at the head of the whole thing. But yet we see he stays back and he sends the other people. The answer is the famous answer. Because Moshe grew up in Midian, he said, I have to have Hakaras HaTov. I cannot participate in this divinely decreed war and do any not okay thing to the Midianites. And I can't participate. The Chazal tells us the famous metaphor for that, the mashal is, do not throw rocks into a well you have had benefit from. Chazal say Moshe had a taiva to see the Nekama and participate with the Nekama of Klal Yisrael. And plus Hashem said, you're supposed to go, as if. So the question is Hakaras HaTov trump a direct tzivui from Hashem? This is Moshe's great moment. The answer is, Moshe was machadesh in this sivui that Hashem, his actual, even though it was highly implied that I should accompany them and go, Hashem's intent wasn't actually that I personally go, because it says in the Torah, be like Hashem, v'halachta bidrachav. That's a big deal. He realizes it behooves him to, as if, override Hashem's direct command for him to participate. He said, this is bigger. He's giving a peshat in the halacha. You wouldn't want to be across the table from HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this machlokas. But Moshe is. And this is Chazal. I didn't make up one word here. This is how Moshe had the, I don't know what to call it, the incredible stellar ruchnius to step out on a ledge here and paskin this. And he says, I'm not going. This is what touched me very much. Moshe is willing to stand in these incredibly difficult places. What does it mean to imitate God in this thing? How far does Hashem's Ava go? This is how conscious Moshe was. I'm using the word. I can't possibly understand what Moshe's consciousness and awareness is. But this is its outward manifestation. If Hashem is kulo avo, there's something greater. What's one of the main commands in Torah from the Shema? Love the Lord your God. That's almost a throwaway. Of course I'm going to love him. Hashem says, no, this is tzivui. This is not a simple matter. This has many different manifestations. What's greater and better than love and loving Hashem or someone? This is the Hashem aspect of it. It's loving the loving. That idea to be like HaKadosh Baruch Hu and attempt, you can't do what Hashem does, but to go in the direction of loving as Hashem loves without bounds. I've said this to you before since I've been talking to you on Wednesdays. Hashem even loves the evil people. His love is unbound. Moshe strived for this. He was going to love so much that the cheshbon of Hakaras HaTov allowed him, as if made it look like he was not going to do what Hashem actually was telling him to do. And that, when you love the loving itself, it becomes supercharged. I don't mean to use a mundane expression, but in the following way. You can love something, and you can really feel it, and you could really develop yourself in it, but there's a promise in it that if you actually become very attached to the imitating of God by loving his whole creation, everything within it, there's a great promise of it's got a great shot of having continuity. You will be able to maintain it. Especially because, as we've been saying for weeks, when you apply the process to itself, it becomes highly intensified and much clearer. That's both qualitatively and quantitatively. You're conscious. This is going to seem like a side point, but it's actually not. It's the same idea again. What do most people have a hard time with after they worked hard on a piece of Gemara? Then as you go into your Chazara mode, you go over the Gemara and whatever you learned. Well, you always have the big promise. You can't compare 101st time to even the 100th time. You go, yeah, Chazara is really good. And people just look forward to the Chazara Seder. Right? Well, here's a way to look forward to it. Chazara is a way of applying a thing to itself. You learned the piece and you cracked your head on it and you came up with nice pshat. You worked on it with your chavrusa all week long. But when you go back to do chazara, you bring older and wiser, hopefully, eyes to the same material. You should never do chazara by rote. There's something to that too. But you better bring a consciousness to it. The same as you needed the best level of understanding and your intelligence when you first cracked the piece and began to settle down all the pieces, bring that same thing back in your chazara. You will be able to hopefully do it a little bit more quickly. But if you do it consciously, guess what? You're going to have some chidushim you did not have those other times around. There will be chidushim. This is not my promise. This is the Torah's promise. My Rebbe's Rebbe, Rav Alter Chanoch Henich Leibovitz, would prepare his Shir Klali for 40 hours when he got around to going over one of the ones he had given earlier. And it's a Shir he had already given earlier. After the 40 hours, he would open up the Gemara again and start as if he had never seen it before. He was able to do that. That's no simple feat, by the way. As if he had not seen it. He wasn't biased by his own bias. That's incredible. Bring that freshness to everything you do. You'll enjoy it more. I promise you. That's it. Oh, no, one second. I just want to add on a personal observation, which I noticed, which makes it hard to be mentally and spiritually conscious on a more ongoing basis. I don't know about you gentlemen, but the buses weren't running for a whole long time. There was much less foot traffic, all the shutdown, right? These past couple of months. When the buses started up again a little bit, it was like thunder coming down the street. And it's the buses have been back for a while now. When a bus comes by my house, I'm like this. It's like a roar. It's like my hearing got sensitized. And here's the reason why. When things are quiet and you're in a state of consciousness, there's less spiritual static noise. Sometimes it's not so much in the positive, the divine spiritual revelation and enlightenment that's needed, but rather that the outside noise of quieting down. So instead of being focused, here it comes, on what's outside of yourself, and we almost can't help it. Like if somebody goes, ha, you're going to jump because he caught you, right? But if you're really menuchas hanefesh and you can get that focus, instead of being focused on what's outside of yourself, you can focus on what's inside of yourself. And that's your neshama hakadosha. It's a greater ability to be aware and to see the spiritual and thus to see Hashem and to know what he really wants. Make your best call. You must get into that state of mind to be successful. Snap decisions sometimes have to be made, but you will be the best snap decider if you have gotten your ability to go quiescent in your thinking. Thank you.
Yeshikar.
Thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
I'm doing my best to keep this going. I mean,